You're listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, a weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients without becoming overwhelmed by work. Today, I'm talking with a very special guest, Justine Ronchon, who is very high up in the organization at Boehringer Ingelheim. We are talking about creating win-win situations and lots about other learnings from her quite exceptional career up to now. So stay tuned for this really, really nice chat with Justine. And now the music. Hey, have you joined the LinkedIn group? Do you follow me already on LinkedIn? Justine? She does, actually. So join her and also follow me on LinkedIn to get lots of updates. Head over to the LinkedIn group of the Effective Statistician and join with other like-minded statisticians. Justine has an awesome career, and we'll talk a little bit about that. She is now Global Head of Statistics at Boehringer Ingelheim, which is a really big pharma company. It's maybe not that well known because it's still completely family owned, which is quite exceptional for that size of a company. And if it would be within a usual ranking in terms of sales, it's a really, really big company. So it's an honor for me to talk with her about creating win-win situations and lots of other learnings from her career. The podcast is produced in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the video-on-demand content, which is ever-growing, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. There's really a lot more to come over the next years. There's a reduced rate annually for just £20 for non-high income countries, and also only this nominal £95 for high income countries, which is about the same in euros or dollars nowadays. So head over to the PSI webpage at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of The Effective Statistician. Today I'm talking with Justine Ronchon. So, how are you doing?
Hi, Alexander. I'm doing great. Thank you. What about you?
Very, very good. It's beautiful Monday morning and I'm talking to you being at home. And you're also at home, and that's in Copenhagen. What brought you there?
That's right. Happy Monday to you too. I'm in Copenhagen today. And yeah, I'm a German born in Poland with a French name. But today, as you just said, I'm in Copenhagen in Denmark. And this is where my current home is.
Very good. Very good. You have had a very, very interesting career up to now. So tell us a little bit about the different career steps that you had up to now and what your original path to getting into statistics was.
I perhaps don't want to go too much into detail because it could be a long story, but let me give you a short summary. So I'm a statistician and a psychologist by profession. And right now I'm the global head of biostatistics and data sciences at a large pharmaceutical company. So we in biostatistics and data science provide, I would say, the ideal combination of the business expert knowledge needed in clinical development with the skills needed in data science. So what motivates me to come to work every day at the moment is really that what we do today really changes patient lives tomorrow. And we contribute to informed decision making. We bridge data to solutions. We turn data into insights and actions for the good of patients. How did I get here? I started my career in a clinical trials unit. So very early in my career, I handled a lot of data.
Yeah, awesome. And so today we will talk about so-called win-win situations. So what does that mean for you, this term, win-win?
Win-win is a situation for me that has potential to be beneficial to all parties involved. What I observe in our daily business, however, is often this tendency to view situations not really as win-win, but rather as win-lose, so that people need to win by beating the other side. From my perspective, focusing on this winning, being the best, the first, can make sense, but it can also have a negative impact as well, as it can distract you from the original purpose and even destroy value. So I like the win-wins much more. In a win-win, all parties really benefit one way or another. And there are no losers There are only winners from my perspective. So you can learn and benefit from each other, even from your competitor. And I think win-wins are tangible and are real. We just need to make sure that when win-wins are part of our day-to-day work.
I absolutely agree. I think we need to much more have this abundance mindset at work so that we work together instead of fighting against each other, and see negotiations and things like that more as a way to create these win-win situations so that we can work together.
I agree. Yeah.
I see that both, you know, within statistics teams, so within the function, as well as across the function. So there shouldn't be any competition in that regard, that it's, you know, I win, you lose situation, but more competition is for me kind of learning from each other and having, some kind of benchmark against what I can compare myself against, and that's sometimes motivating, but it shouldn't turn into something that is, where you just want to win for the sake of winning. So
I absolutely agree. I think this is, you just mentioned competition. Yes, there could be, and I think there is also something like a healthy competition, but in this competition, for me, they shouldn't be a loser. Can benefit from another. We can learn from each other, as you just said. And I think this has also a lot to do with leadership. So if you take, for example, real leadership, if you are a leader and you help everyone you lead to develop to full potential, then I think you do a great job. Because in some cases, that can mean that supporting a talent results in somebody who is going to be better than you with time. So what is your benefit? The benefit is that you create a lot of trust and you have a network around you of loyal people. In addition, you as a leader, of course, also benefit because you get more things done through others. You deliver better results, and this probably also faster. And finally, you also benefit from this mutual inspiration and stimulation. So I think leadership is a good example for this win-win situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Another example is sharing your knowledge, sharing your know-how, whether that be through podcast episodes, or whether it's a contribution to a conference, or whether it's writing a paper. These are all situations where you help the community grow, and it's not about I'm better than others. It's about helping each other and growing together. So in terms of these win-win situations, do you have any strategies how to create these?
Good question. There is an African proverb that I like very much, and I have it even in my office in a 3D print. So if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And I'm a strong believer in this together. So for a true win-win situation, My first recommendation is to create a positive experience for all people involved. So to build this attitude towards making something happen and do it really together. It should be forward-looking and it should be inclusive. So for me, it even starts with the right wording. I learned with time that when I meet with people, I used to say that we have to have a dialogue, not a discussion, because a discussion means to me that you most likely have different opinions, different positions, and it sounds like a confrontation. And because I don't like confrontations that much, as probably nobody, I like to come together for a conversation, to exchange interests, to explore our mutual benefits, and so on. And the basics for that are, from my perspective, that you need to be prepared. So what does it mean? It means for me that you do your homework first. You prepare yourself by collecting relevant information ahead of time. It can be facts, it can be data supporting your position. And then before you come to the table, you identify options that exist for both you and the other side. You can identify and you can set clear goals and objectives, and you can even prioritize your own interests. But at the same time, you should plan how you want to create value also for others, how to become more inclusive. So my recommendation here is, for creating a win-win situation, show empathy, stay positive, put yourself into the other's shoes, switch perspectives. For example, give feedback from the employee's point of view, take the other department or the other functions position, take even the vendors or competitors perspective. And don't forget to remind yourself that everyone is interested in the same question. What is there for me? So try to understand the other's interests, and instead of making assumptions, ask questions. I think this is the most important recommendation from my side.
I absolutely agree. See, all these communication aspects are very critical to first communicate what you really want, but even more important, probably listening to the other side, what is really their interest, not is their positions that they may state, but what is the underlying interest, and asking questions, and through that builds this relationship that they open up and that you really understand the underlying motives. I
agree.
Really,
coming back to this asking questions, I experienced a situation where people were a little bit, I would say, confused. Why is she asking so many questions? And I thought, okay, should I ask questions or do you want me to work with assumptions? What is better for you? And I think asking questions is really important. And because this is the only way how you don't work based on your assumptions only.
Yeah. And I think it's, for me, it also shows that you're interested in the other side, that you really want to understand where they are coming from. And what, for example, are any conditions, any constraints that they have that they need to work under. And that helps you also to find these win-win situations so that you can achieve something that you can both live with. So there's lots of situations where, for example, you have a discussion with your clinical team about deliverables of tables. And then people say, oh, we need the tables by that date. And then can I understand, where do you need them? Why do you need them? What is the purpose behind that? And then over time, you figure out, well, they don't need actually all the tables by that date. They only need a fraction of the tables by that date. And and that is, a typical example where, you can create win-win situations in a way that they get the necessary tables in time and you have enough time and resources to deliver everything with quality.
Yeah, and with that, you also made sure that you have the same understanding, you are on the same page. And as you just mentioned, I think this active listening, asking questions, and also the attitude behind this. So if you just give up this "I want more than you" attitude, I think you are on the best way to create such a win-win situation.
Absolutely, absolutely. In terms of these win-win situations, do you think that's a career driver for a successful career?
A career driver. Can you tell me a little bit more what career drivers mean for you, Alexander?
So for me, career drivers, attitudes and skills that help you to have a successful career over the long term.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So for me, career drivers are more like I'm a psychologist, like an inner voice. It's more like a calling in you. And I would say, yes, one or some of the career drivers, I can talk a little bit about it in a few seconds, help me to create such win-win situations, yes. But it's more than that, I would say. Let me explain you a little bit what I mean by career drivers. For me, it's, for example, important to have a meaning and a sense, not just in my work, but also in my life. So for me, it was always clear that my career must create something where it's for the good of others. And I want to contribute to something that is bigger than just me or even a company. So with time, I also understood that I would like to use my talents and my skills to make positive changes for others. Perhaps therefore I studied both psychology and statistics. And one of these career drivers is for sure also autonomy, which is sometimes a little bit, I would say, difficult in the corporate world. but I think it's needed, especially if you want to be more innovative or drive changes. Even if you want to create win-wins and put yourself into the shoes of others, you need to step back, remind yourself who you are, and you need the ability to make decisions, but also to have a choice. If you don't have a choice, there is probably no room for improvement and no room for maneuver. So this is for me, as I said, this meaning and the sense in my life and also in at work, autonomy. These are two of the main career drivers. And I would say another one is for sure also creativity. So even in a highly regulated world we are, even in a corporate world, I want to work on new ideas and co-create solutions. This is really important to me.
So basically, you refer to the three aspects of motivation that Dan Pink talks about a lot.
Oh, so you're right.
Mastery and purpose. And I very often refer to these for myself as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me recommend perhaps something also to our audience, because this is something that helped me a little bit to sort myself and also to get more insights. So what I did, I think this was 2 years ago, I did the so-called personal value assessment. So this is available online. You can do it on your own. And I did it, as I said, some time ago. I would say the drivers or the values I just talked about were also included in this assessment. And this was not something that I would say was surprising to me, but it confirmed a little bit that these things are really important to me, not just in my life, but also in my career.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of creativity, that's an interesting aspect that very often statisticians don't talk so much about. But can you give an example of what creativity means to you?
Creativity means for me that I really seek for new opportunities to develop myself, but also others, and that we look for perhaps solutions that are not that obvious on the first glance. So when you just rely on your expertise and what you know, I think this is not enough. But when you meet people who are different, who work in other industries, not just in pharma, who are very much interested really in create something really for the good of others from different, as I said, areas like environment, like architecture, like other industries, as I meant, outside of pharma, Amazon, Google are the most prominent examples I think we are all talking about nowadays. So if you meet these people and talk and exchange ideas, then I often experience these moments where new ideas just occur. And then you try to make them happen together. So you team up, and it could be just a very small step at the beginning, so that you think, okay, this is something I saw, and I don't copy just one-to-one what others did, but this is something where I think, oh, this could also make sense to us. Let's try it out and do it even in your small environment where you have control. So just an example from own daily work, there was this, I would say, hype on agile working some years ago. Mm-hmm. We started this agile working already, I would say, very early in time. And I implemented a role of an agility master in a biostatistics and data science department, where people ask, oh, what do you want to do with this agility master? Do you really need him? Mm-hmm. And I said, yes, I think so, because I see a clear need from the teams. The teams are asking for somebody who supports them, and they want to learn the new ways of working. And for that, I would like to give somebody this opportunity to try it out. And we did it. 2 years later, we experienced that this is not just our department, but also some others across the company and even across the industries. So, even though it was not a new idea, it was quite new to pharma, I would say.
Awesome. That's a really, really nice example that, you know, this, how this curiosity to learn more helped you to find something that is outside of the usual way of doing things. And it's not like these very, very often cited examples of having an innovation in terms of your statistical analysis or your study design or something in that area, but it can be also about how you run your business, how you improve your processes, how you improve your leadership skills. All these different aspects you can, you know, be creative about and try new things.
Yes, I agree with you. I think this is more than just, I think, yes, of course, we need to be innovative and also creative with regards to new study designs, to new methods, and so on. Nevertheless, I think there is more. And as you just said, it could be new ways of working. It could be new processes and for sure also leadership. So why not to try it out? The only thing that is really important to me in this context is that you also allow for mistakes. So don't expect that everything will run in a perfect way and that you will be always successful. So even with this example of this agility master, I would say it was like a roller coaster. There were many lows and
absolutely
many highs.
if you're not failing, then you're not innovative enough, not creative enough, I would say.
Right.
Okay, so failure is maybe a good other word to speak about. So have you been in situations where you were lacking these drivers in your career, where you felt stuck? And what did you do about it?
To be honest with you, I don't think I have ever felt really like I'm stuck and trapped in an unhappy work relationship. Nevertheless, as I just mentioned, there were also some highlights and also some lowlights. What helped me there was that I was always interested in continuing to learn, even though there were some, I would say, not that nice situations. But my motivation was always to learn rather than climb this career ladder in this traditional mm-hmm. manner. So when I decided for my first job, for example, in the Center for Clinical Trials as a project statistician in oncology, this was a time where I was just done with my master in psychology. And yes, I had a solid background in statistics, but when I started my job and was announced just 2 weeks after I started as a statistician responsible for all projects in oncology at the center, and this were international trials and projects, I was a little bit concerned that I will not make it because I had no clue about survival analysis at this time.
Okay.
At this time point, I really decided to shift my main focus from my original education as a psychologist with a solid background in statistics to really statistics and to learn more about topics and analysis and methods that I haven't had the chance to learn before. And here also my former or my first boss really helped me. And on the other hand, I also tried to reach out to colleagues, to peers, and to find possibilities to do my homework. So, for example, I found some courses at the University of Heidelberg, went there, learned again as a student. I started networking and some self-study. So I think it's important that you at this or in these situations get motivated and keep going and not just sit there and think, no, I will not manage it.
So I think so you have a strong understanding of your purpose and where you want to go. And I think the other point is that you take responsibility and move forward. I think that is where a lot of people get stuck, that they have this, mm-hmm. that they don't assume the responsibility for their own situations where they are at the moment, and don't see it as a learning opportunity, I think.
Yes, I agree with you. However, I sometimes think that doesn't need to be such a, I would say, situation where you don't feel uncomfortable. It could be also a situation where you are already in your comfort zone, and here you can also feel somehow stuck. I can give you another example also from my own personal experience. So it is about my coming back to my current company. As you know from my from my CV, I left my company. And I was at another one, a very good one. And then I came back. And you might ask, why do you come back? So what motivated you here? So if you don't mind,
yeah,
I would like
yeah,
to share
yeah,
this.
Go ahead.
Sometimes people are afraid of leaving something and then even, you know, thinking about coming back. So I started at the current company as a senior statistician, and it's not long ago. It was in October 2013. Then I became a team leader in 2014. And then I left the company 1 year later for personal reasons, and I moved to Denmark where my husband lives. And I was lucky to get a fantastic job at another big pharmaceutical company as a project statistician for obesity, something which was really new to me. And then just a few months later, I was informed by my former boss that there is an open position as a head of statistics at my previous company. So what did I do? I decided to apply, and I eventually got the job. And the motivation behind this, again, was not that I look for a new job or I felt uncomfortable. It was this idea, oh, yes, I could create something new and I could shape the future. I had again more room for maneuver.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I understand that sometimes being in a very, very comfortable place can also make you feel stuck.
Exactly. And you always need to balance your pros and cons, you know. Yeah. And with the perspective of today, or, you know, I did not expect that I will, for example, develop beyond statistics. So when I came back, I took over this role as a head of statistics. Then 1 year later, I became the regional head of biostatistics and data sciences in Europe. And eventually, last year, I became the global head with sites now in Germany, US, China, and Japan. So I would say 5 years ago, I couldn't imagine that I would be where I am today.
that's a really, really nice story. So that's also a story about how you progressed in terms of your managerial career. Now, many companies have both more managerial track, and then they also have a more technical track. What skills do you see statisticians need to have on these two tracks that are maybe in common and which are maybe more separate?
Mm-hmm. This is also a good question. I think both tracks are important because you need as well people who are more focused or more interested in the technical track, and also more or people who are interested more in the, I would say, management or leadership track, mm-hmm. right? I think for both tracks, when I'm looking back to our statistics or data science area, you for sure need, and you mentioned this at the beginning as well, good communication skills. So communication, presentation, and negotiation skills, I think, are essential. And you remember we were together last year at the FSPI Statistics Leaders Meeting and listened not just to your presentation, but also to the presentation given by Christy Truang-Stein. Yeah. And she told us a lot about effective communication skills and also influential skills. So nowadays, you as a statistician, for both tracks, really need to know the business. What does our business? Who are our clients? Who are our customers? Why do they need us? And how do we fit there? So I think this is important. And in addition, I think we also need to understand how decisions are made. It's not just the numbers anymore, and it's not just management anymore. I think this is really the combination of all these characteristics.
Yeah. So in both tracks, you need to be a really, really good leader. One is maybe more kind of, you have, in addition to being a leader, you also have the, let's say, typical supervisory skills, but these mm-hmm. interpersonal leadership skills like communication, like negotiation, like managing conflict, like understanding the other side. The things that we talked about earlier all are important, as well as all these, you know, knowing about your business in terms of how it is set up, how it's functioning, where kind of what are the financial constraints, what are the regulatory constraints, what are the reimbursement constraints, all these different things are important.
Yes, I agree. And you just mentioned you need leadership even in the technical track. So leadership here means that you have the bigger picture, that you understand, as you said, the business. So leadership is not exclusive just to managers or directors or leaders in the very narrow sense.
Yeah. Absolutely agree. What would you recommend to statisticians to improve on these different skills?
good question as well. I am struggling sometimes with my communication skills as well. So I would for sure recommend to practice more mm-hmm. And to take the risk, even if it could be hard for statisticians, to go out practice storytelling, practice communication, present something in a bigger audience, raise your voice, speak up. And as just mentioned, taking risks can really be hard for statisticians. I think we have all been trained to be good experts, not to judge too early, to have enough evidence before we speak. And I have the impression, yes, we are very good at talking about risks, but we are not really good about talking about gains, about the positive impact. We are somehow a little bit risk averse, and here we can improve.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. All these leadership trainings, having reading books, going to these so-called soft skill trainings is really good, but it only can work if you complement it with, you know, practicing these things, because you just don't learn to be a good presenter just by reading a book about it. You just need to present more.
That's right. If you practice it, even if it's not the best experience in your life, just do it. And yeah, and you can, of course, listen to the Effective Statistician podcast and learn a lot from the others, and also recognize that you are not the only one having this problems.
Yeah. Thanks so much. In terms of learning, I think the other point is you can find a mentor that helps you with these kind of things, that challenges you on improving more. Also, your supervisor can be a great source for help in that regard. So that if you, for example, want to give a presentation, you first give this presentation just within your staff meeting or something like this in a much more safer environment, so that you get some feedback before and can practice a little bit more. Or that you try to, if you, for example, need to go into a difficult situation, you do a role play first with your supervisor about that, where the supervisor, you know, plays the other part. Or if you want to become better at listening, maybe you can also practice that with a peer or another colleague that you know and trust, where you can say, oh yeah, I want to practice better listening skills, so let's do that together, and please provide me feedback on these kind of things. Mm-hmm. So
That's right.
I think there's a lot of things you can do in your day-to-day work to improve on these leadership skills, but you need to be intentional about it, and you need to have probably some kind of framework. And there is where the formal training comes in, something that helps mm-hmm. you to see, okay, what are all the different topics? How do they relate to each other? What's my training plan, so to say? What's my roadmap to be becoming better? That's where I think the more formal trainings come into play.
Yeah, I agree with you. And here I think we can really use the supervisors, but we can also use our peers. The important thing is that you start in a safe environment and just don't jump into a situation where you probably feel very uncomfortable, even though sometimes it's also okay to do it, but it's much, much easier to start with a safe environment. Yeah. When I look back on my track, I have had several good supervisors in my career, so they really inspired me, not just to how to see things from different angles, but they did not just supervise, they really placed their focus on people. So they knew where are the talents, who are the talents, and they asked questions and provided this room for example, presentations, for dialogues, for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now we talked already a lot about things that a lot of people would call that's very close to psychology. And as you have a master in that area, can you tell me maybe a little bit about how that helped you in your career and what other statisticians could potentially learn from that?
Yeah, at the beginning of our interview, I mentioned that I have a solid background in psychology and statistics. That's right. And I still think, for me, it's a great mix when it comes to working in healthcare. If you work in academia or if you work in industry, it can really help you a lot. And I like very much the combination. And when you are now asking me about psychology in more detail, I would say it helped me a lot to learn about the techniques, how you talk to people, how you approach problems, which questions do you ask. And this is nothing where you, I would say, need to study psychology now. You can learn it also via trainings. You can learn it from podcasts like this. You can practice again. But I would highly recommend this. And I think this is not, you know, this is not the full spectrum. So over the past years, for example, I also discovered new areas. So during the past years, for example, behavioral economics has become more and more important in my daily work. And I think this would be, for example, a good topic for another podcast. You can combine even more, you know, not just psychology, statistics, but also this area.
Yeah,
I think there is more to explore. It's not just this.
Behavioral economics, where people, is this about where people think about the participants and the economy just not as logical, you know, human beings, but more kind of the typical human beings we are, with all our biases and
exactly. Yeah, this is exactly how I started exploring this area as well. So it came from psychology, because we learned a lot about cognitive psychology and a lot about bias. And, you know, there is an important field of decision making under risk. And here, take, for example, different biases that when you look at that from a logic point of view, you shouldn't do it, but people do it. Just as an example, this sunk cost fallacy, which I really love. If you buy a ticket, you know, for a cinema and you spend 10 euro and the movie is bad, people tend to stay in the cinema, even though this means another 1.5 hours of their life spent on a bad movie. And this could also happen to you in daily business. You invested a lot of resources, you invested a lot of efforts, but you don't consider the probability of success that is in the future. You tend to look back, and this is not right.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I've seen a couple of examples where people, you know, started to build some tool, for example, and then there was this nice offering from a company that provided a much, much better tool that had all the features already that they, you know, not even dreamt of, but still people then stay with, you know, their half-developed in-house tool because they have invested so much in it, and then that's
exactly
the sunken cost for the problem.
Yeah, and here again, you ask me about psychology. Psychology, I would say, helps me here a little bit in my daily life, also to make people aware of such biases or potential for some biases like that.
Yeah. And with that, we really come full circle back to the beginning where we talked about your origin of being a psychiatrist. We talked about win-win situations and how we can create these, how that also helps you to be successful in your career. We talked a lot about motivation, autonomy, and driving your mastery of your technical skills. We talked about what can lead to being stuck in terms of both stuck in a maybe uncomfortable, but also maybe in an overall comfortable situation, and how leadership can help you to get out of these, how your personal drive, your personal taking responsibility can get out of that, and how leadership also helps you irrespective of whether you're on the technical track or whether you're on the managerial track. And this behavioral economics topic, yes, I think that's a very, very good further episode in the future.
Great.
Thanks so much, Justine.
Thank you, Alexander. Thank you for this opportunity. And I will also listen to the other podcasts.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain, who helps with the show in the background. And thank you for listening. If you have enjoyed the show, please, please tell your colleagues about it. Because I want to have as many statisticians being helped with this podcast as possible. And if it's helping you, it's probably helping your colleagues. So be a nice colleague and help your colleagues to be helped with this podcast. So if you want to learn about the show notes, head over to theeffectivestatistician.com, and there you will find a lot more about the podcast to help you boost your career as a statistician in the health sector. And like always, reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.